ladies and gentlemen, Isaiah Knox.
All right. Isaiah. Well, thank you. I've been called worse, so don't worry about it. My wife's over there. She can attest to that. Yes, Akeo, it is Urban Dreams, not Creative Visions, that I took over. So we got to talk about that this morning. So I have a clicker back there. I don't have a clicker in my hand. So if I say next slide, please don't worry. I'm just clicking to the next slide. But as you can see, that's a picture of me when I was about my daughter's age. She was right over there. Way Porter. So that was me when I was about 5, 6, 7 years old. Still lived in Cedar Rapids at that point in my life, right before I moved to Seattle. But as you can see, that's my mother, the circle there, next to the dog, Bear. And she's white. All four of those children in that picture are biracial children. For many, many years, during celebrations, Christmas, Thanksgiving, things like that, the only people of color I saw were my siblings or my mom's friends. But most of my family, when we're at a celebration, I'm looking out into a room full of white people. So culturally, growing up, I was very culturally trained to be white. But the world soon told me that I wasn't. Next slide. Wow. Two times in my life, someone has addressed me as that. The most dehumanizing word in the English language, meant to dehumanize an entire race of people. Two times when I was the age on that slide before, someone called me that. I'm gonna tell you guys the story about both of them. I'm gonna say the word that does not give you the right to say it. Shortly before that, my grandparents got divorced. We grew up on a farm outside of Cedar Rapids, by Prairie, very white. We moved in to Cedar Rapids, my mother, my stepfather's, my sister's father, went to Coe College, so we moved in that area. My grandmother moved to get closer to us. She was very uncomfortable in the area, really outside of her comfort zone, but she wanted to be closer to her grandkids. So one day I was running from my grandma's house. She moved about 3 blocks away, down 2 blocks over 1. And I'm that age, and I'm running home as fast as I can, leaving my grandma's house, and I run through this lady's yard, and she says, "Stay out of my yard, you little nigger." And I just kept running. Ran home, and I didn't know, like I said, this was really the first experience I had with any kind of race, especially any kind of thing that had to do negatively with race. And I told my mom immediately grabs me, walks me down to that person's yard, and proceeds to yell at her and scream at her, and I realized that as she was tearing her a new one, that was not to be taken lightly. However, I found out why my mom was so upset about that word. Because even in my own family, someone had called me that. So a couple years later, my mother had told me that my great-grandmother, who I learned to love as I was about 5, 6, 7 years old. And now I think back, I was like, why didn't I know her before 5, 6, 7? Because she had asked my mother why she didn't tell me she had a little nigger baby. And that's my own family. So if it happens in my own family, trust me, it still happens. Preach, right? You know. Next slide. If you're not familiar with the word dog whistle is more commonly how it happens now. People aren't just overtly racist and just don't use the word. They like to code it. Dog whistle is a common way of expressing bigotry without appearing to do so. That's happened to me as well. I'll give you guys a quick story about when that happened. I was about 16 years old in shop class in Seattle. This is back when shop class was still at your home school. So I'm in shop class, I'm excited to build something. Touching stuff, hammers, saws, and all this stuff. And all of a sudden the teacher says, "Keep your cotton picking hands off that stuff." Say it again. So I jumped back and I said, "What'd you just say to me?" He said, "You heard me. Keep your cotton-picking hands off that." So, as any 16-year-old boy full of himself would do, I proceeded to cuss him out like my mom cussed that woman out on that front yard that day. I immediately went down to the principal's office, was immediately suspended, because what the principal said was, "That's just a typical phrase that people use. There's nothing offensive about that." That's what dog whistling is. I'm gonna give you a couple of more examples of dog whistle. You may have heard these before. I'm gonna read these phrases. So if you say, "That's ghetto," what we hear is, "That is a negative thing I associate with blackness and or the working class." If you say, "He is such a thug," you might as well be saying the N-word. If you say, "That neighborhood is hood," that means there's a lot of black people, working class people in that neighborhood, and it makes me feel uncomfortable. If you say, "You are so well-mannered," what we hear is, "The way you carry yourself does not align with the way that I have been led to believe that black people act. You are a rare case." This one's even better. "You are very articulate." "You speak clearly and confidently, which I do not expect from black people. Again, you are a rarity." Next slide, please. That's my family. If I tear up, don't, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm emotional about my family. They say if your why doesn't make you cry, then it's really not your why. So they make me cry all the time. But that's my family. We have a lot of fun. Again, my wife, Jenna, she's over there. Porter, that's my mini me. She's over there as well. Chance, 15-year-old boy, goes to Urbandale. And my daughter, Johnny. So, whew, I didn't think it was going to get me this early. So I would hope that my kids would never have to go through something like I went through. Unfortunately, my son has. Martin Luther King Day, matter of fact. So, the few times that we talk about what good things black people have done, February and Martin Luther King Day in school. So one day my son comes home and he's like, Dad, did you know that once upon a time, you and I, we couldn't eat at the same table?" And I said, "Son, you're black. You couldn't eat there either." He didn't quite understand that for a while. He understands it now, though, because a couple years ago on his yearbook, some kid said one of those things about, "You're not really that black." Because he's articulate, because he's a 4.0 student, because he cares about his grades. So he had one of those experiences as well. And what I hope that my daughters never have to go through that. Yeah. But being a black parent is probably the most difficult thing in the world. Whew, you got a tissue or something for me, bro? Thank you.
Thanks for your support,
bro. Oh, thank you.
Help me back here, man.
I hope my daughters never have to go through that, right? For being black, for being a woman, for being anything. And I hope that they're never disrespected and treated wrong. However, every day I stress about that as being a black parent. Because my son didn't know he was black. His friends don't treat him as a black, but do they when I show up? Realize that now, wow, do kids look at my kids different once I show up to the class? And they're like, "I didn't know Porter's dad was black." I'm sure they do. Next slide. So like Martin Luther King, I have a dream as well. I'm sure many of you do. We've talked about it a little bit. It's been expressed. But my dream is this. As you know, I'm the executive director of Urban Dreams. I also live 1 mile away from Urban Dreams. My wife grew up in Des Moines, born and raised here. Never in a million years did she think that she would live there because of all the dog whistles that have been said about the area. However, we've grown to love the area and the people there. But my dream is this, that when I sit on my front porch, that every person that walks by my yard has the same opportunities as every kid everywhere else in our community. Unfortunately, it's not true. I've been in different meetings where I've heard people actually say, oh, I prefer to work with those kids, those high-achieving kids from Johnston or Waukee, when I'm proposing programs that Urban Dreams is providing. It's really unfair because they were born there. It's not their fault. It's something called the birth lottery. If you're not familiar with that, I saw my friend Jay Byers over there. The partnership is doing some good work on the birth lottery and things like that. There's good research out there showing that where you're born really matters on your ability to move out of poverty or to sustain high levels of success. So it is my dream that in my area, the 50314 zip code, which is the poorest zip code, one of the poorest zip codes in Des Moines, where the median household income is about $28,000 in the entire state. These kids and those people have the same opportunities that everybody else has. We're working diligently on that at Urban Dreams. And I'm gonna talk about that right now. Next slide. Oh, actually, I'm not. Sorry, Jay. I took some stuff from you. The stuff on the, what side are you on? Anyways, Des Moines best of Des Moines. I took that right from the partnership's website, right? We live in a great, great city. I love this city, right? I've started a career here. For an articulate black man, I've had a lot of success. However, Des Moines is good for a lot. It's also the worst for a lot. Some of those stats over there are very, very frightening. One that's not up there that I want to talk about real quick is this. A reason why those stats happen is here. There's a study done that 75% of white people do not have any non-white friends. Okay? In a 100 friend scenario, the average white person has 91 white friends, one black friend, one Latino friend, one Asian friend, one mixed race friend, and one friend of another race, of other races. The average black person, on the other hand, has 83 black friends, 8 white friends, 2 Latino friends, 0 Asian friends, 3 mixed friends, and one friend of another or unknown race. I've done my own research around this as well. Like I said, I grew up in a predominantly white family. And I'm pretty sure that for most of the people in my family, my aunts and uncles, I'm their only black friend. I know, right? But one bullet I really want to stress is the one, the very first bullet, that shows that Des Moines is a city of inclusive growth. However, for the next slide, I'm going to talk about some stuff of why Des Moines is not that inclusive when it comes to growth. I'm going to read some stuff from my friends over at One Economy. If you missed the breakfast this morning and if you want to get some good data, there's some good data here. Google this, the Director's Council One Economy report. I'm going to read a couple things from there. The median household income for blacks and African American households in Polk County is $26,725 in comparison to the median household income for all Polk County, which is $69,844. According to the 2016 Polk County Health Report, 36% of African Americans and African households with children in Polk County live at or below the federal poverty line in comparison to 13.5% of total Polk County populations that live outside the poverty line. The unemployment rate for African Americans in Iowa is at least 14.8%, the worst rate in the U.S. compared to a statewide unemployment rate of 3.9%, and it's over 16% in Des Moines and Polk County. The median earnings for African Americans in Polk County is $19,776 compared to $35,742 for all of Polk County. And between 2000 and 2012, there was a 15% decrease in jobs in high poverty areas, like the one I live and work in. However, there was a 9% increase in jobs in the Des Moines suburbs. 26% of those living in the urban core are African American, 4% of those living in Des Moines, West Des Moines, and Metro are African American. 5% of those living in Polk, and 5% of those living in Polk County are Black. And African Americans' total representative elected officials in Polk County was 4. However, we elected 2 more recently: Joseph Jones and Renee Harden. So they're not here, but give them a round. All right. But however, it's not only a problem in Des Moines. This is a national problem as well. This slide really represents a study that's been done multiple times across the country by very reputable universities. I'm going to read the abstract of that. We perform a field experiment to measure racial discrimination in the labor market. We respond with fictitious resumes to help wanted ads in Boston and Chicago newspapers. To manipulate perception of race, each resume is assigned either a very African-American sounding name or a very white sounding name. The results show significant discrimination against African-American sounding names. White names receive 50% more callbacks for interviews. We also find that race affects the benefits of a better resume. For white names, a higher quality resume elicits 30% more callbacks, whereas for African Americans, it elicits a far smaller increase. Applicants living in a better neighborhood receive more callbacks, but interestingly, the effect does not differ by race. The amount of discrimination is uniform across occupations and industries. Federal contractors and employees who list equal opportunity employer in their ads discriminate as much as other employers. And we find that evidence that there's little results are driven by employers inferring something other than race, such as social class, from their names. These results suggest that racial discrimination is still a prominent feature in the labor market. I think those stats before showed that clearly. Next slide, please. However, Urban Dreams exists to really help alleviate those problems. I just want to sit up here and give you a bunch of terrible statistics without giving you some of the things that we're doing to help to remedy that. We all know that we have stories of terrible police community relations. Urban Dreams is on the forefront of creating Des Moines a better place for communities and police to get together. This is our 24-hour police buffet. What we do, we open our doors for 24 hours. Chief Winger makes every single police officer come at least once during their shift and interact with people in the community. 24 hours straight, I'm there the whole time. We're looking for volunteers to help alleviate some of that so I can take a nap. So anybody wants to sign up this year, feel free to come by. But these are some of the things we do. We do at least one event every single month where we invite the police and make sure that the police and the community are having positive interactions with each other in order to alleviate some of those racial tensions between the community and the police. Next slide, please. Here are some of the other programs that Urban Dreams does. Feel free to please go out to our website, our Facebook, follow us, all those things that we do. One other thing I want to highlight that we're doing right now is our deferred expulsion program. Des Moines Public Schools no longer expels students from school. What they do now is put them in a deferred expulsion program. They were having a hard time keeping track with those kids. Urban Dreams is willing to do some of the non-traditional things, like go to someone's house that's in the hood and talk to them and make sure they get back engaged in school. And we've actually had one graduate from the program that was expelled, and we know if you're expelled from school, you are basically on a one-way track to prison. Got back in school, five get back in school and one graduate from the program already. We've been doing it for 6 months, so we're getting our youth back in. Next slide, please. Oh, back. There we go. All right, so I'm gonna tell two more stories and then I think my time will be up. When I talked about that dog whistle stuff, it's one of my stories that sticks with me more than any story. When I was about that same age, just about my daughter's age, I remember this girl, she showed up from Hawaii. Blonde hair, blue eyes. First day of school, when she showed up, I was just crushing hard. Her name was Missy Kiltz. And I was like, Missy, can I walk you home? And she's like, sure. Walk me, you know, we walk home. So we walk, I walk her home, and we go there, and her grandma's sitting on the front porch, and she's waving, and I'm waving, and everybody's waving, and Missy goes to her porch, and she's waving back, and I'm smiling and skipping the whole way home. And next day I said, Missy, can I walk you home again? She said, my grandma says I can't walk home with kids like you. It's okay, though. It's definitely okay, because without that, I probably wouldn't have my wife and my kids now. So thank you, Missy Kiltz's grandma, for not letting me walk her home. However, if you see on the screen there, Honorable John Lewis, right? Or give him a round of applause. Yeah, give him a round of applause, right? So obviously, I never had the opportunity to meet Martin Luther King. However, I did have the opportunity to meet John Lewis. So did my son. So he's about 14 at that time, and he has a series of picture books about the civil rights movement that he had put together. So I grab him, and I'm like, yes, we're going to meet John Lewis. I get my son, and all of a sudden he's like, Mr. Lewis, will you sign these? And he's all shy and stuff. And he said, come over here, boy, and let me sign these for you, and let me tell you a little something. I don't know what they talked about. They talked for about 20 minutes. It was probably something life-altering for my son. He probably doesn't realize it now, but he'll realize it someday that he had that much time with him. However, like I said before, too many people only have one or two or three or four friends that are diverse. That's the reason why we don't hire diversely. Hold on. Because we feel comfortable being around people that are like us. Unfortunately, that's not good enough for us. That's not good enough for Des Moines. So for my words of advice are this. Martin Luther King said great things. John Lewis says great things. I have said some okay things. However, when I go too many places, I'm the only black person in the room. I feel comfortable because of the way I was raised. However, many people don't. So it's up to us to reach out and to go places like my wife did, move to an area where she never thought she would, where we love it. It's up to us to make sure that we are going out, because just that one black person, this is for the white people, that's your friend, they don't speak for all black people. Amen. Sorry, one more story, just about that. So remember a couple years ago when the police were murdered in our metro? Yes, everybody remembers that. Terrible tragedy. Okay, so at that point, like I said, we had been doing a lot of things for community police relations at that point, Urban Dreams, and we had got some good press about it, national press even. So that morning, I usually sleep with the TV on, but I didn't that day. My phone's ringing, beep, beep, ringing, emails, texts. So I get up finally, it's like 4:30 in the morning when this stuff is happening, and it's New York number. I call the New York number back, and it's a guy from the New York Times. And he starts asking me all these questions. How could this happen in Des Moines with all the work that you're doing? And on and on. And I'm like, what are you talking about? So I turn on the TV, and I'm like just as shocked as everyone else in the community. And he keeps on asking me, like, I thought you guys were working on this, and you were having solutions and doing good things. And I said, we are. And I was like, why are you asking me this? And he's like, because I can't understand how this could happen. I'm like, do you know that the shooter was white? And he said, no. I said, I'm looking. He said, how do you know that? I said, because I'm watching it on TV. They just identified it. He said, hold on. Let me call you right back. He never called me back. I thought I was going to get interviewed by the New York Times, too, so I was kind of excited. But he did send me an email and said, sorry, we're taking the story a different way. So during that comment, he did say one other thing, too. He said, hey, do you feel comfortable talking for all black people in Des Moines? I said, no, I don't. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Isaiah. Now we'll hear from Emmett Phillips.